This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Life's so full on. I've been working on this deck for ages. These steaks don't cook themselves, you know. Life's good with a Trex deck. Composite decking made from 95% recycled materials that won't rot, stain or fade. Trex, the world's number one decking brand.
It's time to cast off on a new adventure. This is Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Good morning and welcome to Real Adventures from wherever you are listening right around the country. Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood joining you this morning to talk all things fishing, boating and the great outdoors. Redmond, good morning to you.
Oh, a bit short of breath, Patrick. I was running a little bit late this morning. I had to run into your house.
Well, you've probably got a decent excuse given the fact that you're a week down, I think, now with your newborn, little Mia.
Yes.
And how's it going?
It's been 3 years, it feels like. No, very good. We had Mia last week on the 7th of April, and, mate, all I'm going to say right now is what women go through is... I just don't want to ever go through that. I'm glad I won't, but it is just amazing what the human body can do, even like just how they breathe inside, then come out and take their first breath with the cry, and everything went really, really well. Kari's fantastic. Mia's fantastic. We've been very lucky with the sleep side of things, which is good. She's waking up sort of 4 hours.
Jeez, I hope that holds for you.
You mean for Kari?
Well... But,
everything went fantastic, and fingers crossed it goes that way, keeps going that way.
How you were saying what women have to deal with. Well, Kari, it's twofold for her because, one, she gives birth to your children, and, two, she has to live with you.
Yeah. What's that really attractive Tom Cruise or something? That's what I'm usually related back to. Someone like that is relatable to someone like myself.
Yeah, very relatable.
But no, everything's good. I managed to get out in the water a couple of times.
Let's go through it.
You want to go through it now?
Yeah, I do.
Managed to get out. So Kari had a day up in Melbourne seeing her family, seeing her side of the family with her dad. So I thought, make the most of these opportunities now, Pat, as you know. So I shot down to...
What, just ignoring the in-laws? Just decided to keep a little bit of time for yourself, did you?
I thought some of us have to work, Pat. So that was the fishing's work for me, as we know. And very important day at work it was.
Okay.
I headed to a place that I don't enjoy fishing. I don't like fishing there, in Clifton Springs in the Cryo Bay region.
Too busy?
Not busy. I don't like no tide.
Tide.
You know me. And the reason that I went there was due to that moon that we were having. So we had that full moon, I think it was yesterday or Friday, Saturday, one of the two. And anyway, it's a big full moon, and we know what happens on those moons at the start of the week. The tides get slow and ordinary.
Yep.
So being a place that doesn't necessarily rely on tide as such, yes, I think it affects the fishing a bit, but I wouldn't have caught much at Queenscliff St. Leonard's unless I was fishing more into dark, I guess you could say, in that late afternoon that we like talking about on that bigger ebb tide in the afternoon.
Yep.
And I hadn't fished the whiting there or squid for, I couldn't tell you how long. And I didn't enjoy it one bit.
Did you get any cephalopods?
We caught fish. We caught some beautiful calamari. We also got some arrow squid, Pat. Plenty of arrow squid.
Really?
Yeah, angry bastards they are. We got some...
Is that unusual compared to, obviously, I would expect that you would catch your arrow squid more offshore once you get to some slightly deeper water.
They make their way in the bay and you'll hit a patch of them and you'll get 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 and to get them again after that is very rare. You'll get they're so aggressive, you'll get a good patch of them.
Yeah.
They show up in the bay. I got them off of St. Leonard's the week before last, got a few off of St. Leonard's as well. But yeah, you are 100% right. They're more of an ocean squid. The calamari is our traditional Port Phillip-based, Western Port sort of squid. Mm. But they inhabit the bay and I've cryvacked them all for swordfish baits in hopefully the next couple of weeks, so they're ready to go.
Well, this isn't exactly relevant for our listeners necessarily in their school holidays at the moment. Now, I'm sure there's a few that might be going swordfish fishing. However, for those interested in fishing the bay, fishing for squid, fishing for whiting, your easier catches, your flathead. Have you got sort of best guidance over the next week on where's, you know, good spots to sort of target?
100%, especially leading into the bigger tides next week.
Okay.
Next week, having your own business as such, you don't necessarily obliged by the rules of long weekends and whatnot, probably similar to your football.
Yeah, I didn't even realise it was school holidays. So until we were talking about it a few weeks ago when we were checking out the calendar. It's like, oh, school holidays, that's going
to
be important.
Long weekend, the bay's going to be busy. That's what comes to my head. So there's going to be a lot of people out, which is one thing. But what's going to happen is Good Friday being yesterday, with the moon, the tides are going to kick back in. Mm. And we're going to see this, something to do with the RDO. I got told that it only happens once every 3 to 3 years, that it links in to be like a 10-day break for commercial construction. And a lot of people are taking a lot of time off work. So that's leading into next week, and it falls into Anzac Day as well. So that's how it rolls through. So there's going to be a lot of people on the water. So trying to sort of find your own fish is probably the best way to go about it.
Your own patch.
Tidal, in the tide, you're going to probably have a good chance of getting fish with boats because it's more tidal rather than spooky water like Clifton Springs. Land-based, there's going to be plenty of options. I mean, I've seen right around the bay, we've had all your jetties. There's good calamari. There's also plenty of garfish.
Are you focusing on a tide around those jetties and piers? Like,
I reckon going middle evening. Tide, no, early. I'm probably going evening. I reckon evening, Pat. Just piers are often in shallow water.
Yep.
And that's quite often where fish will inhabit during the night. Yep. So your garfish sort of around that sort
bit
of 4 p.m.
onwards.
Bit more
protected around the pylons, yep.
100%. They'll come out and they'll feed along the pylons. There's some great gummy sharks in Swan Bay. There's plenty of options. And the boat factor, it's endless. Like, you've got the snapper still going. You've got tuna in South Australia. You've got these barrels off Port Ferry. When I say barrels, I shouldn't say barrels. We'll refer to them as tuna because they are tuna. But I'm talking 10-kilo tuna right through to 162-kilo, which got caught during the week. Multiple 150-plus-kilo fish have come in out of Port Ferry during the week.
I'm going to talk about that in a moment. And gearing up your small boat for chasing these big fish. Last one on your recommendations around families and the pursuit of fish with families. Beach is always good this time of the year. We've been relatively lucky with winds. Once again, it's finding those deeper troughs depending on your tide movement and then working those areas, Redmond.
Yeah, well, you're probably one to better speak of it because you do love getting down that local in the surf with George, and those gutters that you just mentioned are just spot on for Australian salmon. Air River, which is
brilliant for families.
For kids and families.
If you're looking to get into fishing, they're an easier fish to catch. Yep. They're not necessarily the greatest eating, but I must admit, I cut them up into salmon sort of nuggets, a little bit of egg and flour and a few breadcrumbs.
You know, chicken's only about $6 a kilo.
Mate, these are not, but I tell you what, with nice...
They're right, Australian salmon.
With plenty of sweet and sour sauce, and I mean a lot.
That's Red's tip. It's Air River. So Air River is a place that people really love to get away with their family and friends, and straight off the river right now. It opened the other day. I had a good friend of mine down there. Countless amount of salmon off the beach. Countless. Like, literally as many as they could catch, 30, 40 salmon in a couple of hours session, and that's with pilchards. Metals will work as well. And then in the river, brim. Beautiful brim too. So Air River is a great place to head as well with the kids, but it's just about keeping them active. I took Finn out earlier in the week again. I went to the swamp again, as I like to call Clifton Springs. Gators there, Pat. There's gators there.
You've got to be careful here.
I took young man out there, little Finny, and we had a ball. We just literally, I just wanted to catch whiting, but he's like, bubba fish, bubba fish. And all he wanted was just Tommy Ruffs. So Tommy Ruffs don't have a size limit. So I could fill the live bait tank up as well as a bucket for him and rotate him. And I got to release him at the end of the day. I kept a few for squid baits, as I like to do. But he had a ball. He had about 15 Tommy Ruffs in his bucket that he was playing with. It was just about keeping him entertained. And that's the key bit to what you just asked. 100%. Keeping him busy. So, and a few squid were in there as well. And he can say squid now, but as a kid, he called them tequawks. And he still calls them tequawks. So they're in the tank. And he's like, tequawks have got the Tommy Ruff. So he's like laughing. It was a good day out. But the key to it was just keeping him busy. I had mum out there with me. And he just wants to be active. Doing something.
Now let's get into a bit of 4x4 news. Lexus's LX500D and the LX600. Better known as the upmarket version of the Land Cruiser 300 series, if you're trying to picture it. Has arrived in Australia. There's four specifications. It starts at 148 grand, which, funnily enough, is cheaper than secondhand 200 series that are available on the secondhand market at the moment, and works right up to 210 grand. Like, it's expensive, but it's not outrageous with this secondhand market. But the problem is, Redmond, with, I think there's about 400 units in Australia, they're all gone. So for the first 12 months, there is no ability to put your order in and get it within your first 12 because they're already booked out. So that's continuing along the same sort of trend we've seen with all these...
every car in the country.
Yeah, new releases of 4x4s. The other one is the Nissan Pathfinder is heading back to its off-road roots. We've seen sort of over the last decade, the trend was more of that people mover targeted at almost your mother of two or three. But they're heading back with their Rock Creek upgrades and transforming it more of an off-road vehicle, which will compete with the likes of your Ford Everest, your Prado. So that looks to be coming at the back end of 2022. We're yet to get sort of specs around what it will tow, but a 3.5 litre petrol V6, it's been quite successful in the States. So that looks to be coming down under.
Can I ask you a question there? I always resort back to towing.
Yes.
Would you buy one of these to tow your boat?
Well, depending, absolutely. If probably up to your 5.5 meter boat, I reckon.
Yep.
Aluminium. Yep. I reckon once you get to your size, sort of 6 meters and beyond, then you're looking at in excess of 2 tons, and then you're looking at payload. You know, your inability to take people out take them in your car because your payload increases, and you can very quickly, you know, move over that sort of 2 and a bit ton mark. Now, I dare say this will probably comes in around the 2.5 ton mark tow capacity, potentially.
Yep. So it's not, you can sort of compare it to your Land Cruiser Toyota.
Yeah.
It doesn't match up with the towing of that, does it?
Well, I suspect not, but this is, once again, this is still, this is me speculating, but it makes sense given the success of the Patrol. They had their, and we spoke about this last week on the show, they had their highest selling month in the history of their vehicle, which was extraordinary. 918. It bettered the 300 series Land Cruiser, which have had their distribution challenges, obviously. It's that middle of the road. It's not quite as gung-ho as you're probably Everest and Prados when it comes to their towing ability.
Yep.
But for that middle-sized boat, I still think it makes sense. Hey, we've pushed a little bit for time, so we're probably going to hold this over to the other side of the break. But we're really keen this morning to talk around setting up your boat, your small boat. So we're talking sort of 5.5 metre boat and below, and fishing offshore and chasing big tuna. Because Aaron... And as you said, Redmond, at the moment, Port Fairy, a report on that at the moment, it's fishing really well from 10 to 160, so quite varied.
The fish there are just 100% varied. There's no other way to explain it. You could literally trawl through a patch of birds and pull out a 10 to 15 kilo tuna and the other rod be 155 kilo tuna.
So they're obviously schooling together. Is there any way to... Are you changing the size of your skirts to try and actively target those bigger fish? Yep. Or
I would definitely be running those bigger skirts, just trying to push through them. Well, it depends what you want to catch. If you're trying to just have a bit of good time and get hope to hook a big fish, run one or two big skirts and the rest medium to small skirts if you want to just catch fish.
Because it's not to say you can't catch a big fish on a small skirt.
100%. I've caught big tuna. Like, I don't use much smaller than 8 inch, but I've caught barrels on 6 inch skirts.
Yep.
So these fish, you need to target them properly. So we're going to get into the boat side of it after the break, but the fish side of it, you need to head out there with the gear. Now, you can't go out there on this school of fish right now. When I say school of fish, these fish that are lingering off Port Fairy at the minute, along the 50-metre line, you can't go out there right now and take your normal traditional spin gear that we've been using out the front of Barwon Heads, or if you're using them off South Australia, your gummy rigs, wherever these small tuna are, don't go out there expecting to land 120-kilo fish. I would be fishing the other way. I'd be going heavy.
Yeah, okay.
Catching a fish depends what you want, how you want, what you want. If you're happy to get spooled and lose a fish in minutes, that's fine. If that's not your interest in catching a big fish, because there are smaller fish there.
Yeah.
But if you do intend to try and chase a barrel, don't put a small lure out on a gummy rod.
Yeah.
Because there's a chance that small lure will get eaten, especially if I have a one, two, or three way.
Murphy's Law, isn't it?
And it's just the way things. It's just the way things work, isn't it? It's a prick. But it's these big fish are in big numbers. They're mixed in. I had a mate down there the other day. They got 130 kilo one. They had a three way hookup, 130. They lost another bigger fish around the 80 odd kilo mark. And in that same patch of fish that they landed that big fish on, the first one they had was about 15 kilo, and it got eaten by the seal at the boat. Like, it took the seal, ate the small fish. It was only about 10 to 15 kilo, I think you said.
Before we head to a break, bite times?
Tide changes being critical. This moon will slow, that has slowed it down a tad, but this week coming, these tide, just follow your tide changes. Try and be the sort of the first boat out there. If you can be the first boat out there, which is hard because the traffic is, especially with holidays, the traffic's busy. It's a bit game on, but you need to be the sort of that first boat on the bait as normal. You know what it's like. Don't be afraid to move away like you and I have in the past.
Yeah.
Move away. They're on a spot that we like to call squiggle lines back in the charter day. And it's an area in between Julia Percy and Port Ferry. And Julia Percy is an island in between Portland and Port Ferry. Schoolfish, kingfish, fantastic location to catch all these fish. So on the charts, you'll see squiggle lines there. It's where contours actually change depth, and basically what it is a reef structure that changes very quickly, which holds bait, and that's where these fish are holding in and amongst these squiggle lines.
Yep.
And they're holding, and it runs for a couple of kilometers, say a few kilometers, but and the main concentration of fish are being caught there. But
so you're going to deal with boat traffic,
you're just going to have to deal with boat traffic, and yep. It's just the only way to not deal with boat traffic is to do what I do, and I say this with respect to the ocean, so please don't go out there and be an idiot and get yourself in a bit of mischief. If you do want to have a little bit less boat traffic, the only way to do it is fish with a little bit of conditions. We need a little bit of rough water, and that'll scare other boats away. But also, once again, you're going to be fishing in rough water, so you need to be smart with your with the conditions on the day. The fish will bite better, I'll guarantee you that, than a calm day. They just will. And not only that, you'll have less boat traffic, which means it's easier to find school fish at the school of fish to yourself.
We've got a huge show coming your way this morning on Real Adventures. After the break, we're talking about setting up your small boat to chase big fish. This is Real Adventures.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. Let's find out what's biting in your part of the country, Redmond, New South Wales.
You don't mind if I skip through this because I want to talk about that boat stuff. Can I take this one?
Yeah, you go for your life.
Righto, I'll go for it. New South Wales, Botany Bay, Pat, some small walleye, kingfish, as well as some big thumping tailor. So there's plenty happening in Botany Bay.
Isaac Heaney, actually. I hate to cut in, but Isaac Heaney took his lovely partner out during the week, and they caught some beautiful little rat kingfish.
Do you want to do the report?
No,
that's
all right.
That's good for the report. You could have told me before I did it. he's been good for the multi bets, Isaac Heaney. He's on fire in the forward line.
Having a phenomenal season.
We let us say that on here? Because he's been fantastic.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, cool. Isaac Heaney is good for your multi bet. That's the report this week. No, he's the fishing
and good after for the. You, good for your rat kingfish.
Good for your report for Sydney. I need to follow him on Instagram then if he's into his fishing. Now, the rain passed through. It's passed through. I've got the cricketer, Cam White, he's up in New South Wales, and he tells me Montague Island is on fire with the kingfish, with boats, charters going out, getting plenty of good-sized kings. All legals, great to see. His swell has been relentless. He hasn't been able to get out. Mm. It's been chaotic. Naruma Bar, because he's in Naruma. Naruma, if you want to line Monty up, Monty's closer to Naruma it is than it is Burmy. I think it's about 14K run across, and it's further from Burmy. So Burmy's a safer bar, though. So Burmy's an easier bar to get in and out of. If Naruma's up but you think it's okay, maybe it might be worth the hour drive to Burmy. Might be a bit safer, Pat. So
yep.
Keep that in mind if you are going to head to that area. Mac Tuna in the Sydney Harbour too, which is cool to see. There's so many people land-based catching those, and they pull. Some people are fighting for 20 minutes on the light gear. We're going to move into South Oz. Port Hughes, the whiting continue. I reported these guys a couple of weeks ago, and they are in even... Can we possibly say bigger numbers because there's just bag limit captures for pretty much all anglers. Real mad charters, they're into the whiting, red mullet and leather jacket too. So they're having a massive season out of there.
Did you see there was a 91.1 kilo tuna caught at Port Mac as well during the week?
Well, Port Mac is barrel central. It's one of the best places to chase bass. Apart from the bloody bar you got to drive through when the swell's up a bit hairy, it's a lovely place to fish.
Ryan and Adrian, the Portland Complete Angler, posted it. So yep. Well done, boys. 95.1,
Take us back to the Port Ferry cluster of boats and fish that are there at the moment. Don't be afraid to try somewhere else either.
Yep.
So you got Apollo Bay still.
I was going to say
Portland.
Port Mac's a good hike from Port Ferry.
It is. It is a big hike, but it is a fantastic place. I go there all the time.
Just shows you, though, doesn't it, how far these tuna are spread.
I didn't mean drive on water. I meant make a destination of it. If you're heading from Melbourne, an extra hour and a half in the car to Port Mac is a good place to get a barrel.
But it just shows you, like, right along the eastern seaboard, and then we head further south and further west as we head to...
Or into Tassie, like, the tuna out of there at the moment.
So that, you know... If you're adventurous enough, there's fish right along the coastline all the way to, you know, Victoria to South Australia.
We'll get Chris Vasileski on. We'll need to get Chris on. We'll go a month and a half from now, because he's about to take the boat in a week's time to Portland. And Portland's another place if you want to chase there. We're off bloody track here. Air Peninsula, Samson Fish, live garfish and salmon live garfish and salmon have worked an absolute treat as live bait, as well as King George whiting.
So now, you're getting a bit excited, aren't you?
I want to catch a Samson fish now. I'm nearly allowed out of the house for these tuna. Queensland, Harvey Bay, some huge coral trout on the reefs, like massive coral trout, bigger than the one that you and I caught, but I'll let you have your glory there. You caught when we were away.
Thank you.
Monster coral trout. Amberjack, they're still going great out of the Gold Coast on those sea lumps. So if you can get amongst those sea lumps, fantastic fishing out of there. So make sure you get amongst that. Out of Queensland, we're going to head to WA. We're just going to resort to Albany. It's on fire. In close, there's squid, some big squid, like 2 kilo squid are being caught.
Whew.
Once again, I'm not going to give you a jig color because I don't believe in colors. It's always about the sink rate of the squid jig.
Yes, like that.
2.5, 3, 3.5. Make sure you got it sinking through the water column nicely and you will catch squid. We're also going to talk about the salmon off the surf in Albany. They are in good numbers. So get your medals, get down there, start casting. Some poppers, the report that I actually read that the poppers were working well, but I'll be honest with you, you could probably tie a spoon on with trebles and salmon are going to eat it when they're on. So they're a pretty easy fish to catch, great to do on the school holidays. So Albany, the salmon and the squid are literally on fire. Tasmania, bit struggle to pronounce this. Waitinia Power Station. Behind that, the little browns and rainbows are on.
Please send in your feedback for Aaron's pronunciation, and you don't.
It's an upbeat report, but the language hasn't been good.
You don't need to be kind either.
Please be nice. It's been fishing very well. Just casting small soft plastics. Once again, they're dynamite on those small trout. So Waitinia Power Station is a place to go if you can get down there. And huge schools of bluefin that you referred to before, off the northeast arm of Tasmania, like big schools of them, spread out, literally plagued of them, and mixed sized fish. So once again, Tassie is a hot spot, whether it's in freshwater or saltwater. I know Paul Worsling was out there looking for swords. I actually didn't get a report from Paul, but if you look at his socials, I'm sure you'll see exactly what he caught. But swordfish will be on the barrel tuna off Eagle Hawk net. It's all happening in Tassie. So that was the report this week, because we want to get into something else, Patrick.
We do. We're talking chasing big fish in small boats, and what's important if you want to catch one of these really big tuna that we're talking so often about. There are so many reports about them. What's the appropriate setup if you're going to chase these fish in a boat that's less than 5.5 meters? So
less than 5.5 we're going with.
Yeah. So, I mean, yep. Horsepower is critical to this, isn't it, Redmond? Because if the swell and the
horsepower
weather changes,
and props,
you need to be able to get in relatively quickly. So you need a boat that's going to be able to do at least 25 knots.
Oh, 100%.
Yep.
And it's not necessarily about going 25 knots. It's about having that torque and power to get yourself out of a situation. So you want to keep your nose up, especially in a smaller boat. You don't want to get swamped. Now, 5.5 meter boat is quite a sizable boat. I'm in a 6 meter north bank. You're in a 750.
How low would you go in order to chase fish that are, let's call it, 15+ kilometers offshore? Out to probably.
I'm going to be pretty cautious with the wind.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be pushing my luck. I'm not going to be pushing too much of my luck. It's. I don't think any fish is worth it.
So you're not going to take a 4.5. What about, like, a 4.5 meter runabout versus, say, my 4.5 meter Staby? There's a difference with the configuration of the windscreen, the fact that this clears onto the canopy, so that
it can't get swamped.
You can't have a wave come over the top. Like, that's a, you know, we discussed this off air because it's an interesting one to talk about. But your canopy and windscreen configuration is critical, so you're not at risk of waves coming over the front, particularly if you have those waves that'll jeer up. And you spoke about it before. The most important thing is pick your weather.
Yep.
Once you've picked your weather, things that make it easier, quite clearly the setup of your boat, the horsepower that you have, depth of your hull.
And fuel. Fuel's a big one too. And quite often these smaller boats, what is your Staby hold?
I think it's 70 litres.
So 70 litres isn't a lot, but your actual engine doesn't use a lot because it's low horsepower.
No, it's quite efficient.
Very efficient. So,
but if you don't have a decent fuel tank and then all of a sudden you're adding fuel, the distribution of those jerry cans on your boat, well, that's a consideration as well.
The way that I was going to explain it, we like to run off 1-to-1. 1-to-1 is pretty much, well, my engine doesn't even use close to 1-to-1, but I always count 1-to-1.
So we're talking 1 litre to 1 kilometre travel.
Spot on. So say Apollo Bay, we're doing 200 kilometres for the day. I expect to use 200 litres.
Yep.
That's the way I like to work. Now, people will say use more. You need to have more, and I do, and that's where I carry my jerrys. I always carry what I think is going to get me back from the destination. I should never say always, so I lied then, but Apollo Bay, a place that you're going to potentially use your fuel in your boat, I then carry whatever I think it takes for me to get back from that destination. So Apollo Bay is 90 kilometres. There, 90 kilometers back to the oil rig. So 180 kilometers, I hold 200 liters. So I'm carrying usually 3 jerry cans to get me back. I've never used it. I've been within 40 liters, but always carry enough to get back because you don't know what's going to go wrong. Now, the problem is with these small boats is smaller fuel tanks. Now, if you've got smaller fuel tanks and you're running 70 kilometers, you're probably not going to use 70 liters but you got to get back.
Yep.
And that's the issue. So I wouldn't be venturing to Apollo Bay in these small boats. I don't think it's worth it, not with the Cape Otway. But a place like Port Ferry, where the fish are only 10 to 15 kilometres away from the boat ramp, 100% take your small boat out there. Even take a tinny out there. There was tinnies out there last week that caught barrel bluefin, but they were in reasonably good conditions too, Pat. So they weren't pushing their luck and copping waves over the boat. So weather's crucial. The setup and actual design of your hull, I think, is crucial depending on the weather. Yep. So your boat, for instance, has protection where an open tinny doesn't. So I would take your boat out in more conditions than what I would a smaller boat.
Yep.
Your fuel capacity, that's a big one. Obviously, you need to be able to get there and back. Your engine, make sure it's prop right so you can get yourself out of situations.
You need hole shot.
You need hole shot. You need to have hole shot, especially if you're going out of a place, for instance.
So hole shot is acceleration off the mark. So a wave picks up and all of a sudden you need to boot it. You need to be able to move quickly.
You need to be able to push power to get through that wave or to get out of the way.
That's why Aaron so often talks about, when he talks about, I'm less concerned about top end speed, but I'm more interested in the hole shot. So when I'm, you know, when you're fishing different varied conditions, you can go bang.
I was fishing during the week off Clifton Springs and a mate of mine was fishing in his boat and he goes, oh, race you, see how fast your boat goes. And I said, my boat isn't a race boat. I said, it's a fishing boat so I can go to all these places around our country. And he goes, my boat only goes about 70 to 75 clicks, depending on fuel, how much you're carrying, wind and stuff. So 70 to 75 Ks. His boat goes 80-odd. Well, of course he was going to beat me because he goes faster than mine. But I said, all right, stop your boat and let's go now. Let's have a out of the hole.
Yeah.
And within the first 50 to 80 metres, I was a bit like, you're buddy, out. Dangerfield out of the goal square, here we go. And he couldn't keep up with me. It was me chasing you behind, trying to get my breath back. So that's literally just the example. You couldn't keep up. So it's about catering the boat for what you need. And if you're going to a small boat and you're going to go chase these big fish, make sure you can get in and out of bars.
Yep.
Make sure you can push your ass up when you need, or your nose up when you need to, and get the ass, dig it down and get it right up nice and high, the nose. If you're going out of Burmy Bar or Naruma, chasing marlin, because there's small boats out. The thing is, engines are so bloody good now, you can take small boats out and do all these things.
Yeah.
So but that is, I guess, the long story short, if your canopy, your windscreen set up.
And then, of course, you've got servicing, which is critical if you're going to take your boat for long distance offshore, and then the appropriate safety gear, e-perbs, life jackets, flares, all those sorts of things.
Something that I like to do, and I did this with your big boat, and I'm not having to dig at any marine place. I'm just talking about human error straight up. Humans make mistakes. I towed a bloke back in on Tuesday. The guy that did his engine forgot to put the carby bung in, so he was just leaking fuel out all through his engine.
Yeah.
And his engine, he got out there, but it obviously wasn't tightened, so it rattled loose on him and I had to tow him back in. He only just had it serviced.
And if there's one thing that's going to test your motor, it's going to be driving offshore at 40 fishing. Days offshore. Yeah.
So when you do get it serviced, all I recommend is you get it serviced before you do 190 kilometres off Apollo Bay or Port Ferry and chase these barrel tuna where you're out in the middle of nowhere. Just take it out in the bay for a bit. Go give it a run and make sure that just a natural human error, that your mechanic or something hasn't missed something and everything's running smoothly.
Big fish, small boats.
Capable. Very capable.
Yeah, being takeaways, thorough with your servicing. You quite clearly need your safety gear and how you've got that configured. And then, of course, it's your sea bearing capabilities, your windscreens, canopy setups, and just how that boat can react to if the weather turns bad.
Before you wrap it up, your safety gear is crucial because a lot of people with small boats tend to stick in the regulations of inshore waters.
Yeah,
that's
a great point.
You need EPIRBs, rocket flares, compass, etc. Check on wherever you live in the country, check your guidelines. But you do need different stuff for travelling more than 2 nautical miles in the ocean, offshore. So do the checks before you head out.
This is Real Adventures. Up next, gearing up.
Gearing up for Dometic. Dometic Patrol, an icebox with a sense of adventure. Everything you need for adventures, big or small. Mobile living made easy. Dometic.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's now time for gearing up for Dometic. Enjoy the great outdoors with the comforts of home with Dometic. And on the line today, literally, because he's out on the water, Michael Evans from Victorian Inland Charters joins us this morning because we're talking all things saltwater right around the country. And I'll be honest, I do let freshwater slip away here and there, but there's no one better in the industry than Michael Evans, like I said, from Victorian Inland Charters. Morning, Mick.
Good morning, mate. Thanks for having me.
No dramas at all. Thank you for joining us. Now, freshwater scene, probably not something that I do a hell of a lot. We have had you on the show before, but it's something that I do enjoy, and a lot of people around the country do enjoy. I know we're coming up to the colder months where you're going to be doing some of your best work, but before we get into the long weekend where we are now, what's been biting the freshwater scene, and where have you been fishing?
So the last probably over the whole summer period, basically the redfin in basically all the Western District lakes have been going bonkers. Lake Parambit, obviously to name one of the main ones that I sort of do a fair bit of work at, but Lake Fines is going really good at the minute. Tullaroop out near Maryborough, that's going really good for some real big redfin, up sort of 4 or 5 pan and nudging that magical 50 centimetre mark. There's been the odd trout sort of caught, but a lot of the trout at the moment in most lakes, well, the deeper ones anyway, are sort of holding deep just till this warm weather nicks off. But yeah, for basically the last 5 or 6 months now, I've just been booked up flat out with redfin charters and the odd ones sort of up at Eildon here and there.
Do the redfin slow down as the water gets colder, or are they all round?
Yeah, they will do. So they're sort of, well, they're not slowing up too much at the minute because we've still got those warm temps coming through. But the next, I reckon, month or so, the reddies will start to slow right down, and then your salmon and your trout fishing will really start to improve.
Now, you say salmon. We're obviously not talking about your Australian salmon or your Tasmanian salmon. What are we talking about there?
Chinook salmon.
Yep. And where are we going to be chasing those?
Lake Parambit and Lake Bullamary. They're basically the only two lakes in Victoria that, or in Australia, I'm pretty sure, that have them.
Yep.
They've been sort of firing up the last couple of weeks. People have been getting them on pilchards.
Yep.
Down around that sort of 20, 25 metre depth. But yeah, as winter comes in, you'll start picking them up on the trawl and casting and all that sort of stuff around the edges. So they love the cold water. They love the cold temps. And that's when you'll get them up and about a bit.
Before we get in.
Same with,
sorry, you keep going.
Same with your big brands and your rainbows, all that sort of stuff. As the water temps start cooling right off and we start getting those sort of cold, frosty mornings, that's when the trout fishing around Victoria, Western Victoria, is really going to improve.
Before we get into some areas around the state for the trout in the winter months, the Easter long weekend is here. I know you've only got a few spots left. Do you know what spots you've got left for the next couple of days, or next 9 days, I should say?
Oh, not off the top of my head. If anyone was interested, they could just jump on the Facebook page. I've posted up a few days ago what I've got left. There's only 4 or 5 sessions tops over the next 8 or 9 days that I've sort of got left. So yeah, if anyone's keen, just jump on there, have a look, inbox the page, or give me a call.
Now, if I'm giving you a call, what are we catching? That's what I want to know.
At the minute, it will be redfin or Chinook salmon.
Chinook salmon
have just started to come on the bite. So, and redfin, you can come out and get 100, 150 in a half day session and take home 50 to 80 good ones, like keepers for a feed. So, yeah, there's no lack of numbers in them, that's for sure.
As a novice in the freshwater scene, with especially with eating, do the redfin actually, saying that that's a big amount of fish, do the redfin feed freeze really well?
Yeah, yep. So a lot of people, there's a couple of ways you can do it. A lot of people get the Chinese containers, they fillet their fish, and they put the fillets in Chinese containers and fill them up with water,
and
you freeze them all that, so then your fillets don't get freezer burn, and they'll last 6-12 months like that, no worries.
Yeah, right, that's cool. I've never heard of that. Now, you're at Lake Parambit at the minute, but where are we going to see the next few months where Victorian Inland Charters are going to be? I know you can go anywhere. You've got the trailable boat. You can go anywhere you need to be, but how do you see it panning out? We've had some. It's been a pretty steady... It hasn't been hot, but it's been steady with, I guess, air temperature, and it's still quite warm still at the moment, like you said before. How do you see the season sort of panning out?
I think it's maybe dragged out a little bit longer than it usually does.
Yep.
Like, even into next week, I think we've still got another 3 or 4 days of 27, 28 degrees.
Yeah.
So I reckon another month or so, you'll start seeing me doing the trout charters a lot more. And Chinook salmon, obviously, down at the Crater Lakes, Parambit and Bullamary. Especially once Bullamary's boat ramp, all that's all redone and everything sort of mid-year. But I'm looking at going up to Lake Eildon this year to do some trout charters rather than just going up there to Cod and Yellowbelly. I might actually go up there and do some trout charters this year, do a bit of trawling and dam rigging up there.
Yeah.
And I may do a few trips over to Lake Fines this year for some trout as well. So, and then obviously the Crater Lakes for the trout and salmon.
Now, before we do let you go, because I know you're on the water and you want to catch some fish, you reposted a trout during the week, I've seen on your social media pages, and you can follow Mick on Victorian Inland Charters on Facebook and Instagram. Now, you released, you kept a big, well, I think you kept it. It was a massive brown trout from last year. Take us through that. I'm not too familiar with the old bent minnows, but I know you snuck up on a fish and you landed an absolute monster of a fish.
Yeah, so that one was end of January, start of February this year, so only a couple of months ago.
Yep.
And I was trawling out in the middle of the lake, and it was glassed out, and for 40-odd minutes or so, I'd not had a touch, not seen a fish on the top, and just sort of 20 or 30 metres up in front of the boat, I seen two big fish jumping around, literally out in the middle of the lake. So I pulled the boat out of gear while I was trawling and just sort of snuck right up on it and used a surface lure, a bent minnow.
Yep.
And, yeah, sort of first cast, I just put it in between the two big fish, and I thought if one takes it, let them pick sort of thing, and pot luck, twitch, bang, it was on.
And
that went 72 centimetres and 8 pounds, 12 ounces. So that was a real big buck.
Is that unusual, especially for January, February?
It is, but if you get them really overcast, calm mornings, where the sun's not up and it's not hot, bright hot sun directly straight on the water, you will still get the odd trout up on top, feeding for an hour or two after sun up, chasing minnow, chasing bugs, whatever it is, on the surface. And sometimes it is right out in the middle of the lake. A lot of people go around the edges all the time, and the last place they think of is to go out in the middle of the lake. So quite often there's big fish out there that people just drive straight past.
Yeah. Well, it sounds easy. So if you want to catch a 72 centimetre and 8 pound trout, just give Mick a call. He'll take you out there. But in all seriousness, Michael Evans from Victorian Inland Charters, he has a few days available over the long weekend, we'll call it. So 0402 347 515 or contact him via his socials on Facebook or Instagram, Victorian Inland Charters. Mick, go get the fish. Thank you for joining us on Real Adventures, and I hope you have a great winter on some big trout. Play the game for you. We'll catch you soon.
Pleasure, mate. Thank you very much.
That was Gearing Up for Dometic, mobile living made easy.
Reds Review for Club Marine, Australia's leading provider of boat insurance.
It's now time for Reds Review for Club Marine. And Redmond, if you are buying a boat, buying a caravan, what is important if you're going to attach that caravan or that boat to the car? What's important?
Your tow ball.
Your tow ball.
I got it right.
I was like, is this a stupid trick question?
No. Just,
No.
I had my phone vibrate too, and I had a text message, and I was like,
no.
I was just being a bit rude to you, but I got it right.
I thought you'd panicked there.
I did panic. Like, crap my pants.
Today's review, TAG Tag, they've just released their new range of tow ball mounts, and I was reading a review on 4x4 Australia's website. And when it comes to tow balls, one size fits all doesn't work with every vehicle on the market when it comes to tow balls.
You know, so, I've been caught out with this multiple times.
I think we all have.
I think you and I actually did one time.
I think we all have. But TAG, as I said, they've just released their new range. Notable sort of features that they have are adjustable tow ball mounts, which include vertically adjustable hitch rates.
Yep.
Which up to 3.5 tons, which is pretty much going to suit just about every single boat or caravan that you've got.
Yep.
So as I said, adjustable height positions up to 135 mil. There's also, they've got their heavy duty adjustable hitches, which is rated to 4.5 tons. Once again, that hits pretty much every maxi trail boat in and on the market. But once again, it's the ability to height adjust that is really important with this. And the other thing is, these TAGs are manufactured using drop forged steel, and then they're robotically welded together for the precision and consistency, so you know that you're going to have the longevity and the reliance that you can, you know, park and put your pride and joy on the back of these tow balls and trust it that it's going to get you from one place to another. So if you want more info on TAG tow bars and tow balls, head to their website for more information, and that is Red's Review for Club Marine.
Nicely done.
That was Red's Review for Club Marine. Insure your boat or jet ski with Club Marine, Australia's leading provider of boat insurance. Check the PDS to see if this insurance is right for you.
You're listening to Real Adventures with Patrick Dangerfield and Aaron Hadgood.
Welcome back to Real Adventures. It's time for Red's Tip.
Now, we've been running this show for probably, I don't know, maybe close to 5 years now, you reckon?
Too
five
long, years? Correct. No,
200, probably, don't know how we haven't got the sack. But do you know why I don't think we haven't got the sack? It's because I don't think anyone listens to the show, Pat. Do you want to know why?
No, I've got abused plenty of times, so I'm sure people do.
Red's Tip. I've said it before, multiple times, and it's going again. It is school holidays. There's going to be a lot of people at boat ramps. That's just going to be.
I know what you're going to say. You're going to starting times?
Oh, it's going to be. No, we're not. No, don't tell them that tip because I need that for myself this week. This is a different one. We're going with, turn your bloody lights off at the boat ramp. It's a little gaff there, Pat, because no one listens to us, because I launched during the week with Robbie in the morning and the car went first, lights on. Second car went, headlights are on. Third car went, lights are on. And I'm thinking, just turn your lock. You can't, the person backing down can't reverse down with their mirrors, because have you ever had light shown into your eyes and you tried to do things? It's very hard to see, Patrick.
I thought your tip was going to be, if you're going to meet with someone, make sure it's not like 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock.
That is my good tip.
Make it like 5:45.
So you've just blown. You've just blown my weekend.
Because
ruined my weekend.
No one plans to ever meet at that stage.
It's never 7:53. It's always 6:30 or 7. Red's tip: turn your lights off, please.
Flying gaff. Now, this is a cracker. No, it's not a cracker. We shouldn't laugh because it's not funny. But hours after receiving his provisional driver's license, Aaron.
Right. I don't know. A
driver has been clocked doing 193 kilometres in a Toyota Hilux. I didn't know Toyota Hiluxes could do 193 k's an hour.
I'm sticking up for him. If I watch you play footy on a Saturday on TV, I go outside and kick the footy. The F1 was on this week, Pat.
The F1 was on. It was also on the New South Wales highway, because New South Wales Police Highway Patrol in Sydney Metro were in the remote town of Griffiths, and they've clocked this guy doing 193 kilometres an hour. It blew me away. And then the fact that he just got his provisional driver's license hours earlier.
Got a question for you.
He's channeling Charles Leclerc.
Just got a question for you. It's relevant. We might not have much time, but
No, you're right.
If speeding is such an issue, why do they make cars that do 193 bloody kilometres an hour?
Well, that's not a bad point. But the point is
money, revenue raising.
No, the point is a Land Cruiser, Toyota Hilux can do 193 k's an hour. Now we're not condoning it, but it is impressive.
Fascinating.
It is. Well, I didn't think you went that fast.
You've been listening to Real Adventures. I'm going to try and go home and go fishing. We'll see you guys next week.
It's Tyre Power's Big Footy Final Sale. To kick things off, you can get the power to buy three and get one free on selected Toyo passenger car and SUV tyres. Tyre Power's Big Footy Final Sale can't last. Visit tyrepower.com.au now.